afternoon slash evening, whenever you happen to be listening, and welcome to the first episode of The Rumbling Herd, tentatively titled. On this episode, we're going to visit with producer of Sonic's Gate, Adam Brown, who drops by to talk a little bit about the movie and some of the challenges they faced and some of the more interesting little notes about it. So that's really great. Talk a little bit about, first of all, actually got to go, as some of you saw, to the Ford Center Sunday afternoon and look at some of the new improvements. And just to kind of recap that, let me tell you, they did a lot of good work there, and it's pretty impressive. Considering what it looked like last year, it's night and day. And like VP Brian Burns actually said, is that it's not that you see a lot of big things like the scoreboard, but there's just hundreds of little things that you'll kind of come to notice as you go along, and you'll just kind of appreciate about how much work that they put in and how far that the arenas has come. One of the best things about it was the concession stands. That's, you know, as somebody that goes to sporting events and rarely buys food and rarely buys drinks, I just kind of go for the game, and I don't like to spend $19 on a Coke. But, you know, honestly, the concession stands were really, really nice, and you could almost go and just, you know, have a real good dinner there, you know, right before the game, which was not the case last year. Last year, you were getting just kind of a stale, salted pretzel and some cheese ooze, and you could maybe have that with a nasty Sierra Mist or something. But now, you know, you've got lots of good drink options, lots of food options. I mean, they had different kinds of sandwiches. You could buy meat and whatever, and cakes and pies made from scratch. And that's stuff that you couldn't get last year. And that's, you know, that's just little things that kind of make going to a game a lot more fun. And that's the whole intention, obviously, is that they want you to go to games not just for basketball, because sometimes when the games aren't great to go to, you got to have reason, and it's all about entertainment. And so that they want you to go for dinner, and they want you to spend the money in the concession stands and buy the T-shirts and spend money doing whatever else. So, you know, that's that was a major upgrade, I thought. Just a small thing that I thought, you know, granted I never will sit down there in the lower bowl ever, but the chairs are new and they're very comfortable. They're very slick. They're very easy to fold down. They fold up nice. I mean, just little things like that. You take it from kind of bland arena with cloth seats that may or may not be dirty to now having nice leather high-backed chairs. That's just a, you know, another thing. And obviously the scoreboard is just fantastic. The wedge is very cool. That being Clay Bennett's idea, I guess. The wedge is very cool to look at. You know, it's really for people that are sitting in the lower bowl, and also referees and players to look at. But that was very cool. The courtside club is just unbelievable. I joked with somebody while I was there that, you know, that's a type of, looks like you could have a wedding reception in there. It's got just a huge fireplace. It looks like the lobby of like a super fancy hotel, honestly. It's really incredible. You know, I would say that the locker room's awesome, but I've really only been in one other locker room, and that was the Ford Center's. When the Hornets were here, I went in that one, and you know, compared to that, the Thunder locker room's awesome, but I don't know what other, you know, locker rooms look like throughout the league by any means. But Loud City was a lot fresher, a lot brighter. You know, Brian Burns kept using the words fan experience, enhancing fan experience, and little things like that kind of make it better. And instead of going up to this kind of dark, dreary, concrete-driven area, you go to a place with now Thunder colors, and it's got banners hanging and nice flat-screen TVs and fresh paint and lights. You know, you don't feel like you're sitting up in the dark, and it just feels a lot better. I mean, little things like that, they count. And so they've done a really nice job in the Ford Center, and there's more improvements coming next year, which is pretty awesome. The new entrance should look really good, because as of right now, the Ford Center looks kind of boring. It just looks like a big round circle of brick. So next year, the entrance and the new concourses and stuff, that'll be really neat to have. Today, which is Monday, October 12th, I actually watched the whole movie this morning, Adam, and I got to say, even as a person that has lived in Oklahoma my whole life, it was a fascinating, fascinating movie.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you were able to make it through the whole 2 hours. You know, a big concern. concern of ours was kind of keeping it shorter and more digestible for someone who, you know, wasn't necessarily inside of the whole story the whole time. So, good to hear.
Yeah, I guess I could see how somebody could get bogged down, but as somebody that, you know, has kind of watched this whole thing unfold from the opposite side, it was really interesting to just see kind of how almost the breakdown kind of started almost in the late 90s. I mean, as far as from Oklahoman's perspective, it kind of happened right as Clay Bennett bought the team. That's kind of how we saw it, is like, oh wow, Sonics are leaving, you know, because in our view, you know, that they'd been an institution that'd been there for a long time. We never even considered something like that happening.
Right. Well, you know, Clay Bennett came in, and that was kind of when people realized that the team might move. But the circumstances had been set in place far earlier that allowed that to happen. And, you know, that's something we really wanted to cover, is that, you know, our local politicians dropped the ball and allowed the situation to deteriorate. It wasn't. There's no single bad guy. You know, a lot of people like to either point at Clay Bennett or David Stern as the single bad guy.
Right.
You know, they did some bad things, but there was plenty of other bad guys in the story, like Howard Schultz and members of the Seattle City Council. So that's really what we wanted to communicate with this.
What challenges did you guys run into making this? Because, I mean, you had a ton of interviews in it. I mean, you talked to everybody from Gary Payton to Aaron Brooks to Nick Collison to Brad Keller, Clay Bennett's attorney. I mean, what challenges did you guys run into trying to set stuff up like that and get footage?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the interviews, we really didn't expect to get that many. We thought we would get maybe 8 or 9 interviews, and it would be mostly people like Brian Robinson, Save Our Sonics, maybe a couple of Seattle Times writers. And then as we built momentum, word of mouth just kind of spread, and people vouched for us with other people, and we wound up getting a lot of the big players in the whole thing. You know, unfortunately, we weren't able to get Clay Bennett,
right,
or David Stern, or Howard Schultz, or Greg Nichols, but, you know, we really wanted to cover all sides and let people tell the story themselves without too much of our commentary.
How do you think that those interviews would have went with Bennett and Stern and Schultz?
What's that? I'm sorry?
How do you think those interviews might have gone with Clay Bennett or David Stern or Howard Schultz?
You know, it would have been tough to kind of maintain impartiality.
Right.
Interviewing those guys. Definitely there's a lot of motion because we are Sonic fans ultimately, and we grew up with that, and, you know, the cultural value is really huge to us. So it would have been tough to not let our emotions seep into those interviews. And I think those guys made a calculated public relations decision that they could only hurt themselves by speaking on the issue, but we definitely wanted to give them the opportunity. So another challenge was just with the timing of it all. You know, we did our first interviews in early June, and, you know, so that's about a 4-month production schedule,
right,
from shooting the first interview, doing all the editing, and, you know, we were flying all over the country. We flew to Vegas to interview Gary Payton, Denver to interview George Carl. So, I mean, we were working 18, 20-hour days pretty much,
right,
the time, just to scramble and go right down to the finish.
Was that, I mean, as somebody, you know, from Oklahoma City that, you know, we have kind of been painted, you know, we've kind of been grouped in with Clay Bennett, and a lot of people see just us people here as the villains too, but I actually thought the movie was pretty fair. I mean, it seemed like you guys really presented just kind of the story and how it went down, but was that difficult to try to not be so accusatory towards Oklahoma or just, you know, specific people? Was it hard to keep your biases out of it?
The citizens of Oklahoma are good people. We wanted to make sure to not let any of that get in there, we didn't want to accuse the fans of anything. Again, the fans in Seattle did nothing wrong, and the fans in Oklahoma did nothing wrong. They just wanted to have a basketball team. You know, there's a very small percentage of Oklahoma people who would come on the message board blogs and, you know, kind of rub salt in the wound,
right,
of Seattle fans. And, you know, that's a very small representation of the whole city. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, the only Oklahoma people that we're bashing is Clay Bennett and his ownership group, and not the citizens of Oklahoma themselves.
And it's ironic, though, because, I mean, here in Oklahoma, you know, he was named, Clay Bennett was named Man of the Year. And, you know, and me, even as a Thunder fan, you know, I view him, you know, as a great guy for bringing me an NBA team. So it's, I mean, I'm sure that just pisses you off to hear. But, I mean, it just, it's weird how.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the point we tried to make at the end of the movie, is that if we're going to get a team back, Steve Ballmer or whoever the owner would be is going to have to do the same thing to another city, be it Memphis or Sacramento or one of these other struggling teams that are talking about moving. So, you know, it's a dangerous precedent that the NBA has set by allowing this sort of competition between teams and saying, if you don't have the newest bells and whistles on your arena, we can move your team no matter how much history it's
right.
So, again, you know, Bennett, he is a hero to Oklahoma, and he's a huge villain up here. And, I mean, you know, the facts are pretty clear that he lied, but...
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that at all. Yeah, I don't.
He did what he had to do to bring a team there, and he ultimately was just a businessman taking advantage of the circumstances that were in front of him.
You know, during the film, it really kind of it showcases how Quest Field got its funding, and then Safeco Field got its funding. Do you think that if Key Arena had come along, you know, before one of those two, that the funding would have happened, or was it just the fact that the taxpayers had just financed two huge stadiums, and they didn't want to do a third? Or was it something? Was there something different about the Sonics that they didn't want to finance?
You know, I think that you're definitely onto something there, and that's what we're trying to communicate a little bit, is that there was just a lot of burnout on the whole stadium issue. The Sonics did get a remodel in 1994-95.
Right.
And it wasn't a huge remodel. I mean, it was a pretty cost-effective, small remodel just to bring it up to kind of the minimum NBA standards for Key Arena. And then you had Safeco Field, which failed in the public vote, but the legislature passed anyway, and then you had Paul Allen really lobby and fight hard to get Quest Field built. So, you know, the group Citizens for More Important Things formed, and they sort of won the war of information as far as getting on the streets and telling people, you know, we need to fund education instead of these stadiums. And, you know, there was nobody really fighting the other side of that because there was so much burnout on funding, using public money to fund stadiums.
I
think another interesting part of the story that we weren't able to really get in there was that when Sonics owner Barry Ackerley in the 90s got Key Arena remodeled, his original idea, he owned the land that Safeco Field was built on, and he wanted to build a huge mega arena for the NBA and the NHL there on the land that eventually became Safeco Field.
Mm.
And for whatever reason, that plan didn't work out. I think he needed a guarantee of an NHL team to make it work. There were certain land use issues with the city that didn't get worked out, and so he ended up kind of doing the Key Arena remodel as a fallback plan. So, you know,
right.
There's no question that if he had built that mega arena in the first place, that we would still have a team.
Right. You know, and that's something that's kind of interesting that I thought of. I mean, maybe other cities have dealt with this, but I mean, the Quest Field thing was passed kind of last minute. The Safeco Field thing was passed, and you know, the Mariners were ready to pack up and move. You guys said that the Seahawks were ready to maybe move to Los Angeles. I mean, there was a point, I guess, where Seattle could have been left without any professional team had things not been done at the 11th hour, or is that just life in with a professional team?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like we've been kind of cursed with that, and when we got saved the first few times, and it looked like Slade Gordon and Steve Ballmer were going to come in and save us a third time, and it was just too little too late at that point. And, you know, thanks to the mayor selling out at the last minute, we really don't know what would have happened. You know, I personally believe that if they had enforced the final 2 years of the lease, first of all, most likely I believe they would have won the specific performance case, and then it would have been forced to play out the last 2 years at Key Arena, and most likely we would have found a solution in those 2 years. But the mayor, you know, got beat up in the courtroom. The media was reporting that Brad Keller had a good chance of winning the case, and the mayor decided, well, I'm not going to risk it, and I'm just going to sell out to get my money now. So
right.
We'll never know what might have happened, I guess.
I mean, that's the thing about it is that, you know, that I kind of wonder is that the team was in trouble, you know, as starting early as even in the 90s. And so was it just Clay Bennett, or could this have happened under any other owner? I mean, if somebody, the successor to Howard Schultz, was this scenario a likely situation, or was it just Clay Bennett driving to get the team out? Did that make sense?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Like,
well, I mean, I'm
a different owner, like,
yeah. If somebody else had bought the team, whether it had been a native person of Seattle or anybody else, would it have come to this, or was it just that Clay Bennett really wanted the team out, and right. So that's what happened? I mean,
I think there's no doubt that Clay Bennett wanted to move the team from day one, but you know, we definitely the NBA business model changed after the lockout in 1989, so that the arena was no longer a profitable, viable venue for an NBA owner. So, you know, regardless of who bought the team, let's say if Steve Ballmer had bought it instead of Clay Bennett, Ballmer still would have faced those revenue issues. And
he was going to need a new arena.
He would have been able to, you know, use his sort of local ties to actually get a deal done,
right,
in a similar way that Paul Allen did. Whereas, you know, since Clay Bennett was from out of town, he didn't, you know, regardless of what he says about the Renton Arena, it was clear that that plan was designed to fail.
Right.
And, you know, he basically was just asking for a handout. So, I guess if Ballmer had bought the team instead, he still would have faced those problems, and he still might have, you know, faced a contentious relationship with the local elected officials, but we would have had a much better chance of keeping the team.
But it would have been possible that in 2010, right now, that you guys might have been facing an issue of the lease is up, the team is pretty much on the market, and the arena wouldn't have gotten done, and so the team may be leaving even with local ownership.
I mean, there is that possibility. You know, you never know what would have happened. I mean, the Ballmer Arena plan was an unbelievably good deal, and that's where, you know, we really take our legislature to task for failing to push that through.
Mm-hmm.
They failed to even vote on it twice, this year and last year. So, you know, we... Yeah, like I said, it's not just Clay Bennett. It's our legislature and our local elected officials as well.
Yeah, the thing about the whole situation, I guess, to kind of put a bow on it, is that, you know, here in Oklahoma, a lot of people around here just, and it really bothers me, and I'm sure that some of the people that, you know, Thunder fans that are going to listen to this are going to think that I'm siding with Seattle, but what really has bothered me a lot about it is that a lot of Oklahomans have always said, well, if they just would have went to the games, this would have never happened. Well, I mean, in 10 years, we may have another, you know, we may have a 20-win team, and we're not going to be going to the games. I mean, that's reality. That's professional sports. That's how it works. And so I think what was really good about you guys' film is that it showed that it wasn't just about fans not going to games, or that the city didn't support the team in the sense of fan support, but it was really politicians didn't support the team, and that, you know, taxpayers weren't willing to support the team. I think that's...
Right, and the groundswell of support wasn't there on the political level. The fans were still there, although, you know, who wants to go see a team when the owner is clearly moving out of town?
Right.
You know, so you know, who wants to go put money in his pocket when he's explicitly stated, I'm trying to move the team? So, yeah, exactly. It's not really fair to say that the fans didn't support the team. I mean, we supported them for 40 years, and it was just that last year or two under Bennett when people got really sort of just threw their hands up and said, well, I'm done with this. And, you know, we still averaged about 10,000 fans a game, even despite all that, so
Well, that's what you know, like I said, that's what kind of bothers me, is that people like to point to those last attendance numbers and say, oh, well, look, they didn't even go to the games. But, like, and I just don't feel like that's a worthy reason. I think that, you know, as somebody that sits in Oklahoma, I feel that there were decent reasons, and I feel that, you know, there is some defensible things that, you know, us Oklahomans did to get the team here, because, you know, we wanted a team, and so things had to be done on our end, and it wasn't pretty, and I feel bad about it. But, you know, I hate the way that the team came, but I just don't like that people try to point and say, look, they only had 10,000 fans a game. They obviously didn't deserve a team. And I think that that's
right.
Just...
I totally hear you. Good to hear coming from Oklahoma, because, yeah, that's, you know, like I mentioned, that very small percentage of people who come on the blog and rub salt in our wounds, and that's usually what they say is, oh, Seattle didn't support support the team, stop crying about it, you know. And it's just not true. You know, we, in 2005, when we had a playoff run, we had sold out house every night. So,
right.
You know, it, in the NBA and in any pro sport, if your team is good, you're going to have good support. And if your team's not as good, people aren't going to go as much. So,
right. I was watching the St. Louis Rams play.
Throwing the out-of-town owner factor, and there's no wonder that we didn't have as many packed house that final year.
Right. I was watching the St. Louis Rams play this weekend against the Minnesota Vikings, and it looked like they had about 200 people there, but that doesn't mean that the team needs to be moved. I mean, the team just sucks, so, I mean, that's just reality. But anyway, really, really enjoyed it. Obviously, you know, I'm going to see things a little bit differently being in Oklahoma and trying to justify why we have a team, so I don't feel totally guilty rooting on my new team. But thanks a lot for talking with me, and the film was great. And if anybody wants to go watch it, it's sonicskate.org. It's free, and it's excellent, so I would definitely recommend it. Thanks a lot, Adam.
All right, thank you, Russ.
Some people in Oklahoma aren't going to care, and that's, and you know, I can't do anything about that. And I bet some people don't even like the way I think about it, and that's fine. But I know that the people in Oklahoma aren't to blame at all. So that's, you know, I don't care about that. So, you know, as long as people don't point the finger at us for liking our team, and they don't point the finger at the actual team and make fun of the team, I don't really care, because we just wanted a team here, and now that they're here, we're going to support them, and that's all that really matters. And, you know, it's not our fault that they're here. And honestly, it's not Clay Bennett's fault that they're here. And that's, so people that want to just vilify him, that kind of bugs me, because it's not his fault. Like I said, he's a hero here. He brought us what we wanted. And so, you know, I'm trying to balance this here. I understand the animosity towards Clay Bennett, but I don't necessarily think it's okay completely. I don't think that you can point the finger at him and just blame him. There's a lot of different variables, and, you know, a lot of people were to blame. The bottom line is, the teams in Oklahoma, we love it here, and they're going to be here for at least a while that I know of. So, you know, it's not our fault. We're just fans, and that's the way I look at it. And so if you want to make fun of us for being hicks or rednecks or whatever you think we are, and if you want to make fun of the team and you want to make fun of the name and the logo, then I think you're crossing the line, because I think that that's petty and I think that's stupid. If you want to blame your lawmakers and your taxpayers or, you know, Clay Bennett or whoever, then that's fine. David Stern, that's fine. Do that. But just not us. Make sure that your priorities and your finger pointing goes in the right direction. Otherwise, that's what pisses me off. So, thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll be back next week where we can talk a little bit more. Hopefully we'll have another awesome guest to have on and discuss some crap with. So, anyway, thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
For everything that's wrong, there is a wound.